Our special guest this week is Amy Miller, Director of Marketing for Reform Pharma, a 50-state project of children's health defense. Amy shows us how to restore medical freedom, promote fully informed consent, and end Big Pharma's political influence. My name is Kevin Cookagee, and with my good friend Gary Humble, this is the Freedom Matters Podcast.
Huey Lewis in the news.
Very good.
Yeah. I remember my Ghostbusters.
You know, Ghostbusters.
And several other.
Ghostbusters
80s
was
movies.
Not Huey Lewis in the news. That's Huey
Seriously?
Lewis in the news had to sue Ray Parker Jr.
Because, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So for my entire life, I always thought that was Huey Lewis in the news.
And that's why Huey Lewis in
that's
the news
why he sued.
Prevailed.
Well, what else? Was it Back to the Future? What was his
yep.
stuff? Yeah,
Back to the Future.
And, gosh, so many things in the 80s.
Yep. You would make Huey Lewis and his former attorney, Jerry Margolis, very happy that you knew.
Yeah.
So we're talking about drugs. You know the song, I Want a New Drug. Because our special guest this week, Gary, Amy Miller, Director of Marketing for Reform Pharma, a 50-state project of children's health defense, which we've talked about and advocated here many times, whose goal is to restore medical freedom, promote fully informed consent, and end Big Pharma's political influence and direct-to-consumer TV drug commercials. So we actually don't want new drugs. We want less,
right,
don't we?
Right.
Welcome,
please.
Amy.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and you've been, I know you worked with, I don't know if you still do, but I know you worked with Tennessee Coalition for Vaccine Choice for quite some time. So the point is you've been tackling these issues here in Tennessee for quite
yes.
some time,
I've,
like a decade or something like
I've
that.
I've actually been in this for 10 years, a mom on a mission, and it's because of my own story that I got catapulted into this area. So 10 years ago this year is where my journey started. And then my friend and I, we co-founded Tennessee Coalition for Vaccine Choice. Again, moms on a mission, didn't get paid to do anything. And just fighting for kids. I want to be able to parent my own kid.
Mm-hmm.
What a concept.
Amen.
And now you are part of a team that is booting up this project called Reform Pharma, which is
yes.
which is underneath the kind of part of Children's Health Defense, right?
Right. It's a newer initiative of Children's Health Defense yeah. that launched in the fall. And our sole focus is pharma. And we all know the need to separate pharma and state. So we would like to remove big pharma corruption and restore healthcare integrity.
I like that. The need to separate pharma
yeah,
and state.
Isn't that great?
That's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, Amy, is it in Tennessee, what's our pharma state relationship like right now here
oh,
in Tennessee?
We're just going, this is proactive, right? No, it is so deep. It's so deep. And the contracts and the favors and the what we saw this year in legislative offices it's sickening. Absolutely
yeah.
sickening. And the depth of it, I mean, people know this happens, but the depth of it I don't think they really understand.
I think a lot of people prior to 2020 did not understand how deep and long the medical institutions and medical schools have been controlled by Big Pharma.
Right.
And I've had conversations, and my wife has had conversations, and other people I know who have had conversations with, shall we say, people who are still not there yet and who have not mm-hmm. Come to the reality that, oh my goodness, Big Pharma does control so much of our present reality, especially in the political space. And the question always comes, well, you vaccinated your children, as if to say, because you've come to this knowledge recently, it's not legitimate. And our response is, yes, we did vaccinate our children, and if I had to do it again today, I never would have done it had I understood. I'm very yeah. thankful that my children, and now for my grandchildren, are not vaccinating their children, our grandchildren. Your eyes have been open wide. And this, so in that regard, I'm very, very grateful for what happened in 2020, because it didn't change the things that the bad guys were doing, but it certainly exposed them and made a lot of people rethink, what are we doing?
I agree with that. And one of the things when I started, got into the fight 10 years ago, we, two moms on a mission, go to the legislative offices not knowing what we're doing at all. and we show up and we get thrown in with a lobbyist from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And he goes right into our face and says, don't wake the giant. We have more money than you, and we will squash you with his finger
actually
in my face.
It.
Yes. So that was kind of the first, okay, this is what you think. However, you know, we know the David and Goliath story, so let's just stick with that.
I want to roll back on that for a minute, because that alone tells us everything we need to know. Gary, so often the response to others that don't believe, haven't come to this realization, the blinders have not been pulled off yet, their response is that they believe that the CDC, they believe that Big Pharma are doing this in the best interests of the children, right? Mm-hmm. What this tells us, what her interaction tells us even 10 years ago, is that even behind closed doors, and it's not as if they were trying to hide it, they didn't say, don't you know that we're trying to protect the children? They said, no, we're bigger than you and we have more money than you. We'll squash you. Which is an admission that what they're doing is against the consent of the people, isn't it?
Right. Well, what's funny about that is it was a year ago, the AAP had their day on the Hill, and there was a group of students who showed up, and they had pins that said, the children sent us. And I said, I walked out and I said, oh, the children sent me too. And they said, for what? And I said, well, the vaccine injured just don't have a voice. And I'm telling you, it reminded me of the Lunchables commercial. Do you guys remember when the Lunchables commercial? It was like this little food, you know, take it to school food. But if the kid next to you had the packed sandwich in the baggie, it was like, we don't want to trade your lunch. We want the other lunch. Well, it literally, I had three sets of eyes, and it was, oh my gosh, you just said the wrong words. We cannot associate with you. I had the, okay, I believe you, but I'm not allowed to say that. And then we had the younger students who said, what? I don't even know. Because I questioned, do you guys know that these are liability-free products? Mm-hmm. And people are getting injured. And who pays for your schooling?
Right.
So that was really... It was a great conversation, but then the person who was leading them was actually in a legislator's office. He came back out and was like, oh, no. We can't have this conversation. So it ended up pretty quick. You know, it was a good chance to be in front of them. But at the same time, you saw that they weren't allowed to engage in that. And just this year at their day on the Hill, I tried to engage with the president of AAP. And she wanted nothing to do with me.
Say, what is AAP?
American Academy of Pediatrics.
Okay, that's right.
So there's a Tennessee chapter and then, of course, the national. But, you know, let's have the conversation. Our organization wrote a book, Unvaxxed Vaxxed. Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't even have a conversation. But I will say, 10 years ago, when we approached the legislators, they did not want to talk about the V word. At all. No. Let's not associate me with that.
Right.
Fast forward a couple years. Some of the champion legislators said, maybe next year, not quite this year, but maybe next year, it might be a good time. So warming up.
Mm-hmm.
The following couple years after that, hey, do you guys have any legislative ideas for vaccination, immunization legislation? So we see the progression.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you this year, the opposition agencies and organizations are seeing how powerful the voice of the medical freedom community is.
Mm. Well,
and
that's
that
encouraging,
is
then.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
that's
really
wonderful.
Encouraging.
And they're reeling over it a little bit.
They are. We had a panic moment. We didn't. They did. Over something that we were supporting. And we saw that for the first time this year. I mean, they've always been on the vaccine hesitancy and, you know, trying to market those words. And that leads me to another thing is Reform Pharma is actually diving in. It's all about the marketing. It's not about the safety of the children. Mm-hmm. It's about the marketing. And they've actually hired organization like it's not really an ad agency, but it's a consulting firm talking about the marketing messaging and how to increase uptake. And how to make it more convenient.
And again, you always have to follow the money, right?
It's
one of the simplest axioms and it's true. And this is another thing that I take up in debate when I'm addressing someone. I'm usually labeled a conspiracy theorist, right, for addressing these issues. And my first comment is, well, wait a second. Why are you calling this a conspiracy? Are you not willing to have a discussion, an evidence-based discussion? And if you disagree and have different evidence, that's fine. But don't try to end the conversation by disparaging me so you don't have to listen to me.
Right.
Once we get beyond that, then the question is, follow the money. If we are looked at as some disparaging term as a quote-unquote conspiracy theorist, you would think that we would be motivated by money and there'd be some big money behind this movement. And yet it's parents and people who are volunteering their time to address these things. All of the money is behind the liars. And I say to people, if there's so much power and money to be gained by lying, why would we assume that they're telling us the truth?
That's a great question.
But why, historically?
You should not absolutely assume that.
And yet the CDC, up until 2020, the CDC, the government, Big Pharma have all been given the benefit of the doubt.
But yet the CDC wants more authority and more money to do what they need to do.
So what would, just before we get into some specifics and things we're fighting, even here in Tennessee. I know you've got some national things, right, that I'm sure you're trying to address with Reform Pharma, but we've got a lot. What we find, interestingly, and this transcends medical legislation. I mean, we see this in terms of things dealing with the 2030 agenda, whether it be conservation easements or digital currencies. I mean, all of these major globalist issues are making their way through our Tennessee legislature, and in the most what many consider the most conservative state in the country, we're dealing with all those things here. So I want to get into a few of those things, but I also wanted to ask you, what I mean, I've got my own guess, but what do you think, since you've been doing this longer than I have, so since you've been doing this for 10 years, what kind of increase, like percentage wise, have you seen in the amount of people that were engaged in this pushback on pharmaceuticals, like this pharmaceutical debate, before and after 2020, like since you've been engaged?
Oh, it's skyrocketed. I mean, we definitely saw a change in where we could hardly pull people off their chair, so to speak, to get out and do something.
Like nobody cared.
Nobody cared because Tennessee wasn't California. And matter of fact, the co-founder of Tennessee Coalition for Vaccine Choice, it was out of SB 277 out of California that she said, no way is this going to happen here.
That was when they did away with all the exemptions.
That's when the exemptions, yes. And so my personal story is a vaccine exemption story as well. My daughter was discriminated against to attend a school. And so we jumped on it, but it was like, okay, guys, we've got to be proactive here. We can't react when something's happening. Well, catapult into 2020, and people started seeing it. You could see people dropping like flies, as one of the main doctors said that we had, not Reform Pharma, but in Tennessee, but they, with the ivermectin bill. But that, I mean, he literally said they're going to drop like flies. And you remember,
championed by our very good friend, Dr. Denise Sibley,
yes,
by the way, very thankful for her here in Tennessee.
Yes, it was phenomenal. It was great.
We were
to
the
be
first
the leader.
State to do that, right?
We are the first state. We're the only state right now. Louisiana has a bill that's going through trying to do the same thing. And hopefully more states will do that. Mm. I mean, people calling still to this day, where do I get it?
Where we can get horse paste over the counter now. It's great.
Yeah, you still have to get it through. I mean, people get it from other countries.
Yeah.
India is a good supplier of it. That always makes me nervous, though, when I'm getting something. Not that it's the same as China, but just getting something from another country.
Yeah.
Although I don't know why. Do I think the FDA protects me anymore?
Well.
Let's really dive into that concern.
That's another show.
Maybe that is a better, but or small quantities.
Yeah.
Like we have gotten emergency packs, but they come in such small quantities. And the drug it's a miracle drug, because we have friends that have been cured of cancer.
Wow.
Taking ivermectin.
Yeah.
So it's a remarkably effective drug in combating not just viruses like coronavirus, COVID, all that crap, but
didn't it win a Nobel Prize or
something?
It did
win a Nobel Prize, and the interesting part is, had that been approved, the EUA wouldn't have been authorized.
Right, exactly. That's the whole
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of Tennessee.
The EUA for the shot?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So the what's interesting is the...
Because it's under the theory, as long as there is an alternative, not medicine, what are they, what's the term? Alternative treatment right? Mm-hmm. Then you can't get emergency use authorization.
Which the COVID shot for children is actually still under EUA. That they're pushing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you, though.
I forgot where I was going with that now.
Well, I wanted to get into some things so that we're seeing move through the legislature that I know you're paying attention to right now here in Tennessee. One of which, I don't know if you plan to mention this, but I'd like to mention, we are seeing a bill. I don't know if it's passed or maybe just one house, one chamber, I can't recall. But, you know, right now, our vaccination schedule per the law is dependent upon recommendations by the CDC and the AAP, right?
Right.
And so that's being addressed. You know, it's not perfect, right? But there's still a list of recommended shots, but it's being put to where we have control over that. And so we're not concerned about what these non-governmental agencies think. These recommendations are now going to be in the hands of our Commissioner of Health here in Tennessee. Right. So tell us a little bit about that.
So I actually testified on that in the Senate the other day, and it did pass. It should be going to the floor. And that is a bill, as you just described, that we fully support. And that is something that the CDC and the AAP, first of all, the AAP is a nonprofit organization that is funded by pharma.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a complete conflict of interest. And that was part of my testimony. And then Senator Lamar asked about, you know, am I aware of the risk and the benefits? And am I okay with a commissioner who would be making these decisions who is not, it does, they don't have to be a physician. And I said, he's already making the decisions for the schools. And so it brings it back to the state. That's the bigger picture, is it brings that decision back to the state and then go from there. And, you know, some of the information, I didn't say this during the testimony, but the CDC director, actually, she got her license in 2007. I believe it was, then she started going to the government for her positions, her employment. So she's been on this government track for a while. Her physician's license has not been renewed since 2012.
Jeez.
So that's a, you know, I guess take that into consideration as well. But yes, it does, it removes those alphabet agencies, which again, separation from pharma and state would be great, especially when those are funded by the pharmaceutical industry.
Right. Have y'all trademarked that yet, by the way? Pharma and state, or
separation of pharma and state.
No, we actually are working on a couple other ones, like pharmacide.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's,
I like that. I'd wear that hat.
Yeah.
So then let's jump into HB 2902, which is Sabi Kumar's bill. I'd like to just set the table for the audience real quick, because there's a history here. Did I get that right?
Yes, I was part of that history.
Yeah, with the Mature Minor
Doctrine
Clarification Act.
Yes, yeah. We
that was last year, right?
That. Yes,
and I think Senator Bowling and Bud Halsey were those of the sponsors. I know Senator Bowling carried it in the House.
I mean,
in the Senate. I can't remember the House.
Oh my gosh, I'm like blanking right now. Yeah,
anyway,
there's too much in front of me right now. So.
Anyway, so last year, you know, we during COVID, the infamous Michelle Fiscus, who at the time worked for our Tennessee Department of Health, who was put in charge of administrating the vaccine uptake for COVID, she put out a notice to what she called, quote, vaccination partners across the state, letting them know essentially that they did not need parental consent to give a minor 14 years old or older a shot for COVID, whether they showed up at a Walgreens or wherever, you know, because of this court doctrine that had, so
that was not law.
That was never law.
Yep. Yeah.
Clearly, that pissed a lot of people off, and just like everything else, set alarm bells and people got active. I know you did as well. So did we. And so there was a bill run called the Mature Minor Doctrine Clarification, or Mature Minor Clarification Act, which basically now requires that if you're under 18 and you go in to get a vaccination for anything, right? It's not limited to COVID.
Right.
For anything, it requires parental consent.
Right.
Now, is it written parental consent, or I don't remember what all the details.
It depends on the. So there's also a section of it with a court order for DCS. If they remove a child from a home and their parental rights are not terminated, you can't just vaccinate that child. The parent still has the
parental rights.
Rights
are still in force.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't just dissolve.
So they would have to have a court order.
They would have to have a court order, not just a request, but a court order.
Yeah.
And that's what all of the fuss has been about since then, but it did pass, and we had our senior attorney. This I was part of that before I was part of Reform Pharma, but Rolf Hazelhurst actually testified on and said the use of that case is actually grossly misrepresenting what the mature minor doctrine actually does, and this Clarification Act pulls it back in, and it also under federal law. You have to give information, the VIS, which is a vaccine information statement, to the parent or guardian. You have to give that prior to the vaccination. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a whole lot of things. So after Michelle Fiskus got fired, she actually, what I would say is got promoted.
Yeah.
Because she went on to the national level.
National organization, yeah.
But was put over the District of Tennessee.
Yeah.
For all the vaccines.
And in fact, her main job description.
Just a coincidence, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a revolving door.
Yeah. It's also an in-your-face.
Yeah,
by,
absolutely
by
in-your-face.
And her main job description, by the way, on the website of that organization is to increase COVID vaccination uptake for children 5 and younger.
And she just did a podcast, or I think it was a news clip, actually, and said the COVID vaccines are the most safe and researched ever.
Probably the most
they
researched
probably are
at
most
this
researched.
Point.
They just don't disclose it. Remember, it's 75 years to release that information.
We don't want to tell you, though.
So last year, we protected parental rights, all right?
Yes.
And then what happened subsequently is DCS started throwing a fit here in Tennessee that they couldn't vaccinate,
right?
You know, what, some... Is it 3,000 or 8,000 children? I can't remember.
Well,
how many
they said 8,000, but
8,000, yeah.
The real number is still being determined on that. I mean,
so, and correct me if I'm wrong, this HB 2902 that we're going to talk about here real quick, this was another caption bill.
It was a dirty caption bill.
So we've talked about this ad nauseum, you know, from Tennessee Stands on here on our podcast.
But I've never heard it referred to as a dirty caption bill.
A dirty
bill.
One. It's not that's, only that's, a caption bill.
That's
it's a dirty
that's great
one.
No, it's a dirty caption bill.
I don't know
bill.
How many caption bills are actually great.
Yeah.
But.
So a bill that was one sentence long and did nothing, and we had no idea, all of a sudden overnight becomes this nefarious.
Reverse the Mature Minor Clarification Act.
To reverse it and put power back in the hands of DCS to vaccinate these children with no court order and
with retroactive.
Yeah, they go back in time. Yes, incredible.
So who who is sponsoring that?
Sabi Kumar and Hensley had it in the Senate. Who's one of us, by the way? So there's a great story at the end that we were very fortunate, I think, to have Senator Hensley carrying this in the Senate. Otherwise, this fight would be going a lot worse than it is right now.
And this is, I mean, your typical, the DCS, TMA, AAP, it's all of them, chat, that are all there trying to fight it.
Right.
And you know,
But talk about some of where the discussion on this bill went.
So the discussion was brought up, I know, in the Senate, take it back because it went through the Senate. And so Hale was saying that DCS, last year they passed a bill that gave DCS the, you know, they would do what was in the best interest for children. And so we just want to get that on the floor and get that on record that this is what we're saying. And that to me is, okay, we're talking about DCS here. We're talking about how they want to reverse the court order in the Mature Minor Clarification Act. And so they asked, I think it was Senator Kyle asked if the mature minor doctrine would be affected. He said, I don't think so. And so there was a lot of wish-washy language that was said in the actual testimony. And then fast forward to Kumar. Kumar was making a lot of statements that were general. I'm more closer, I guess, to the Senate side, but it's just a, it was almost like a slip through bill.
Sure.
That they didn't want to talk about all that, which that's nothing new either, but.
He made a statement. I'm having trouble recalling, which is strange, but I actually watched his testimony online live as he gave it. And I recall him saying something like, you know, but before this Mature Minor Act, you know, it used to be standard practice, a standard of care that these approved vaccines, you know, were just given to children. That basically he said that, before we ran the bill last year, that they didn't need parental consent to give any vaccinations, you know, because
that's federal law.
Because it was just standard of care that they were giving to children, you know, regardless of whether or not the parents wanted them or not. That was his testimony he gave.
Yeah, no, federal law, you have to give the VIS. So there has to be some type of consent. And even on the CDC page, it talks about, you know, can we have a year? Can we, you know, how long can the consent go?
Mm-hmm.
But the consent actually needs to be, you know, your child's medical condition could change.
Right.
So it's
he also said, and this is where a lot of the things he was saying, people say, man, all this is absolute false testimony. Not only is he the representative running the bill, he's also a doctor.
He is a doctor, and he also was the one who said, let's not call the COVID shot experimental.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't.
Because we're going to cause vaccine hesitancy. So he also made the statement that informed consent was satisfied if a parent gave approval for vaccinations just into the future.
Yeah.
Even if a completely new vaccine came on the market, that parent's approval 2 years ago just goes on in perpetuity. That doesn't satisfy informed consent at all.
No, and that was the key word, is it whatever's in the pipeline, and you know, for years there's been over 200 vaccines in the pipeline. Now there's, you know, a whole lot with mRNA stuff going on. But yes, it's okay to do that. It's not okay to do that.
Yeah, what's interesting is it completely breaks the idea that there is informed consent. All he's saying is, well, you consented once. The information has changed. Then you must be informed. And the only way you can be informed is if they tell you, oh, here's the new drug. Here's what's in the new shot. Yeah, it's absurd. But the lengths to which they will go to protect their right to destroy people's lives, it just shows you that the money is so big and so powerful.
What's all about the money? Otherwise, why?
Absolutely. There's no other reason. But they've been conditioned for so long that they become so vigorous. They're like vigilantes for killing people, for introducing toxins into people's bodies to kill them under the notion or the suggestion that they're actually doing something good for them.
But those are safe and effective.
Oh my gosh, don't get us into that.
You know, speaking of that, the last bill you were talking about, the CDC and the AAP, that bill was actually brought in about, let's see, 1993, I think it was. It was brought by the Pediatric Association back then so that they could get a piece of the pie for the Vaccines for Children program, because that was actually just like public health departments would give those. That brought that over to the private practice that would increase their well visits. They wanted convenience so that the parents didn't have to take off work or anything like that. Well, fast forward, we know that that's readily available now, but they're the ones who brought that bill and the language so that it would increase the vaccination rate. And like I said, the convenience. Okay, convenience is not okay. The children are dying. Have you ever followed a vaccine-injured family? It is heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we have we have multiple cases. But let's take Rolf, for example. It's so sad. And he's been doing this for, 22 years now? And no justice?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
How much do you think? So I'm a lawyer by trade.
Not a real one, though.
Not a real one. Just an entertainment lawyer. But lawyers, and without plenty of reason, are given a hard time by people, right? There's lawyer jokes, and lawyers are looked at as sharks and snakes, and I agree with most of that assessment.
We call that being lawyered, or being physicians.
Yeah.
So whichever.
But how much do you think this ability for doctors to effectively punish citizens and children of parents with these toxins is a result of, for so many years, doctors were looked at as the good guys, right? Mm. They carry with them this reputation of being the good guys. If doctors were lawyers, in other words, if lawyers were the one, and we know the lawyers are behind the doctors, we understand that for sure. But if the lawyers were the public face of advancing, and it was the lawyer coming in saying, I'm going to put the shot in your child, don't you think that a lot of people would have been more resistant at the outset? But it's because it's the doctors. You know, they care for you. And we saw the doctors become superstars. They became the front of not only the shot, but they became obsessed with themselves. That narcissism came through everywhere, right? During COVID, because the doctors were now the stars. They'd right. be putting on television and I care for you more than this guy.
I'll tell you who the real stars are now.
Complete with nursing line dances,
all that nonsense.
But isn't it that it's the abuse of that trust? I think doctors have right. done themselves an enormous disservice by buying
Absolutely.
Into this and driving this narrative. Nobody trusts them. I wouldn't want to go to the hospital for anything now.
Yeah. Well, we call that the Reform Pharma, the erosion of public trust.
Yes.
And they've done it to themselves. And the true heroes of the doctors are the ones that are doing the U-turn, the pivoting
yep.
and saying, I'm so sorry. And pivoting and changing. That's where the real change is going to happen.
Yep.
But there's still so many that are fearful for their paycheck, for, you know, losing their license.
Board certification.
Board certification. All of it. Exactly. So that, yeah. Again, follow the money, and that's where you find your answer.
Right.
So this bill, despite pushback from many Tennesseans, it was passed in the House committee. But,
right.
But thankfully was yes. pulled off the floor in the Senate by mm-hmm. Senator Joey Hensley.
Yes.
Because, again, this was a caption bill that had an amendment slapped on it last minute. I don't think this was a bill he ever intended to carry. And whenever he was notified, hey, did you know this is this? He listened and pulled the bill.
That's back in the calendar right now.
Yeah, back in the calendar. So, yeah.
But I do want to say with that part, I want to read this part because this also catapults us into the other bill that's happening, the Family Rights Act.
Okay.
A parent means a biological, this is a definition of a parent.
Oh, I forgot about this part of the bill.
This
yeah.
is crazy.
Thank you.
Parent means a biological, legal, or adoptive parent or a person designated in a power of attorney or otherwise authorized under applicable law to make healthcare decisions for and consent to healthcare treatment of a minor.
Yeah, so you're kind of merging a power of attorney with a parent. Now a power of attorney becomes a parent.
Is
de
a
facto,
parent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. which is really slippery because you can use a court order, you can use an adjudicative process to deprive a parent of the parent's rights, and then forever, the new person in that role, that power of attorney, that apostille, right, mm-hmm. the agent now becomes de facto parent.
Right.
When talk about a slippery slope, that's like a cliff.
That is a cliff, and there, the cliff. We keep trying to prevent ourselves from going off the cliff, and every time this year's been,
but there's
it's been a
but
rough
there,
year.
But there are so many cliffs, Amy. This is the challenge.
There is. It's like, you know, you go down the rabbit hole. How much deeper could we go down the rabbit hole?
It's Murphy's Law. I mean, at some yeah. point, you present us with enough cliffs, yeah. we're going to fall off the cliff.
Yes. Well, okay, so let me tell you this really quick. It's Jason Yawn, he was the former president of the Tennessee AAP.
Okay.
Remember, follow the money there mm-hmm. and their influence. But wrote an article he was one of the authors, second author listed from the Journal of the Pediatric Infectious Disease Society, Mature Minor Doctrine Clarification Act, A Setback in Pediatric Immunizations. Mm. And what's interesting about this is
parental rights is a setback.
It is a setback, and it also is an inconvenience.
Yeah. Mm.
And it
no
lowers
kidding.
Their well check visits. And they just are so confused and they don't know what to do. And I mean, they should just ask point blank. It's pretty clear, but it's Okay, so here. It is critical that artificial barriers to immunizations not interfere with life-saving medical care and one of the greatest public health benefits of our time.
So a parent has now been relegated to an artificial barrier.
Yeah. Wow.
So you're no longer a conspiracy theorist. You're an artificial barrier.
I'm an artificial barrier. Wow.
Yeah.
But that's it. It's the language, right? When you use language like that, the premise is, isn't it, that the doctors know best. And again, this is because they came from a position of public trust.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last 100 years, the doctors are mere puppets and advocates of the pharmaceutical companies.
But they have materials now that say how to increase the trust. They know that the trust has decreased. They know it.
So with all of that now, understanding the what's happening here with the nature of parental, I mean, really the core of everything we're discussing right now is actually not vaccination or the efficacy of vaccines. It's the rights of parents. I mean, really, that's what's at stake.
It comes down to, yeah.
And so we, quote unquote, sort of fixed that last year, and now it's in jeopardy again. So tell us the problems that you see specifically with this family now moving into this other bill, the Families Rights and Responsibilities Act.
Yes. So one of the things
which is being sold as a really good thing, a bill that is supposed to be protective of parental rights. That's how it's positioned.
That's how it's positioned, and the Alliance Defending Freedom. They're the ones who brought the bill. They're after getting it on the federal level, as well as in as many states as possible.
Wait, I'm confused. ADF is advocating for this bill?
Yeah, that's what makes this bill really difficult, because ADF is advocating for this bill.
And what does it do?
And almost every other conservative group that I know of, including the Family Action Council of Tennessee, and so many, Connie Regulay, everybody else that we know and identify with politically, are advocating against the bill and can't believe that ADF brought this bill to the table.
So what does the bill do?
So the bill basically says it codifies your parental rights, and then it also expands the parental, or defines parent again, so it could make a little bit more of a wider.
Expands the definition of parent? Okay.
Yeah. It's not just parent. And then it also, what is really alarming to me is the blanket consent. So it's supposed to have teeth by giving a parent a cause of action to sue the government. That's what it's being sold as.
Okay.
But if a parent gives blanket consent, so if you go to school and you have a form that says, you know, little Sally, we can, you know, help her out if she falls and breaks her arm and I can't get a hold of you, we have consent
blanket
to treat.
Consent. Mm-hmm.
Yes, blanket consent. What parent gives blanket consent? So that's really alarming, because if you give that, then you no longer have a right to sue. You're giving it, this whole bill, it's almost like it runs in circles. For everything it does, it undoes, and it gives you a reason to undo it. And so it's confusing. The people that brought it, we had a conversation with them. It was alarming because they didn't care. And we said, is this bill supposed to be for parents, or is it for the corporation or government? You know, corporate side of things.
Or for the lawyers to give them a cause of action.
Well, bingo, because this is exactly, we said the blanket consent has concern because parents aren't going to understand that when little Sally breaks her arm and they have end up going to a place to get her help, and then they decide she has some mental health issue, and then it keeps rolling and rolling.
Yep.
Parents don't know that. You know what was said to us? That's not our problem. If you're fighting for parents, you fight for parents and you listen and you go down the entire way. You stick with them the whole way through, and they weren't. And we were also told by the sponsor, Faison, he said, I don't trust you. I trust other people. And the stakeholders, we were told, by the way, that they met with were DCS. I believe TMA was in there. A bunch of the opposition, organizations.
The Medical
it wasn't
Association,
parents.
the Department of Child Services.
Which tells you again.
It's not parents.
They trust the special interests,
not
the parents.
They trust the special interests. They trust. It's not just saying anymore, I'm going to disagree with you because I'm being paid by the special interests. Now they're saying they don't even trust a citizen. They what does that tell? What time do we live in when they trust the people who are paying the money to get the bills passed?
Well, I don't know, but those two things were alarming, just as a, you know, conversation piece. But again, healthcare is coming up, decision-making authority, all the things that it does in there, making mental health care decisions and physical.
You said you spoke with the ADF.
We did. We went in and spoke with the sponsor, Faison.
Oh, okay.
And then we had a meeting with ADF, their two attorneys.
What did ADF's attorneys... I don't understand what problem they thought that they were solved or think that they're solving by even sponsoring
this
bill.
That's what I wanted to get into. Yeah.
They told us that it is a cause of action giving the parent the right to sue the government. And I know...
But they already have that. That's where I get stuck.
Again, if you read the actual language and dissect it, the more you do that, the more it's alarming. I mean, we find something every single time we go through this bill. That's how it can't even be amended. It needs to be killed.
So, Gary, did you say, though, other than ADF, everybody else who would normally be on our side is against this bill?
Is against the bill.
Okay, that's good.
And that's what, when we talk to them in person, it's like, oh my gosh, your organization does a lot of good things. What?
Yeah.
This is alarming.
And we've remained fairly silent on the issue because I haven't personally dug into the bill as much. But I will say this of interest. This is one of three bills. There have been three separate bills. Gino Bolso was one of them in the House, and I can't remember who filed the other one there. But three different bills filed this year dealing with parental, like almost like a bill of parental rights. And this one being the one that's probably because of ADF support that has had legs and has continued down the path through committee. But I will say the interesting thing to me about all these bills, as well as this one, and the concern that I have right off the bat, it's almost like the Federalist and Anti-Federalist argument over, well, I don't know if this is really an Anti-Federalist argument, but the argument that was had over whether or not we should have a Bill of Rights.
I knew you were going there.
Because the argument is, once you take a step to enumerate something, mm-hmm. then all that which you have not enumerated is now considered not a right.
Right.
You've limited your rights mm-hmm. by specifically enumerating the rights you say you have. And that's interesting when I think about parental rights, because when you think about natural law, common law, and just the traditions of the court, I mean, parental rights are pretty strong and substantive just within what we have today with precedent and case law. The interpretations of our Constitution, the fact that we have parental rights is not really contested.
Right.
So
when you go ahead and start enumerating
which
in a piece of legislation, mm-hmm. anything that's not contained in there, they're going to assume that parents do not have that right.
Yeah. And I would say I've heard others make that argument, and that would be my first and primary beef with the legislation is, do we really want to now? And I understand why. Like, the why is our rights are being usurped at a level that we've just never seen. I mean, there are threats coming from mm-hmm. every side. So the natural reaction is, well, we need to do something to protect, you know, any future encroachment on these rights. So now we're gonna put them on paper. We're gonna put it in black and white. We're gonna protect our rights. But in some ways, That's a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's language that talks about that, and it says it's the parental rights that we fundamentally have in addition to, and so it's
so it almost it makes has like a secondary. Like a Ninth Amendment hidden in there, like even the rights we don't mention, you still have them, kind of a thing.
Well, it just made the parental right, fundamental right, be secondary to what was going to be
in this
law.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You have these rights and some other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poorly written, and could be damaging.
Mm. But where I was going in that discussion, though, back to your point you made earlier, Kevin, like, all that said, what is the problem that an organization like ADF is working to solve? Because right. I would, No, I respect ADF, and, mm-hmm. and I would have to think they understand the history of parental rights, and mm-hmm. and hopefully they understand where we get our rights from, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, they've been advocates for medical freedom. They've been advocates for religious freedom. They've been ADF, yeah, like all of the cases that we would support, ADF support. That's why I was stunned when you mentioned that they were the sponsor. They were the ones that...
So I don't understand the problem that they're yeah. trying to resolve here. That's
they said to us to be able to sue the government. This needs to happen. But
I'm not buying. I mean, parents. Well, we've sued the government for a long time.
Well, they said in order to get it passed, they would have to give an out, which is that blanket consent. They would have to give an out so that I guess the government doesn't get sued too much. Maybe.
By the way, I'm curious whether blanket consent works the other way. And what I mean by that is if I were a parent and sending my child to public school, which I didn't, but if I were sending my child to public school and I told the school at the beginning of the first day of my first student, my first child, by the way, you do not have consent to do anything with these children. Well, that would they take that as permanent?
Yeah, I give you no consent.
No consent for anything. So that no matter what happens, they can't
Can we have a no consent form? Like that's what I want.
A blanket no consent.
Yeah, I want
form.
A blanket. No, I want. So what I want to do is run a bill next year.
No, then they'll go after you for negligence or.
We want a blanket no consent form.
No, that's the greatest form. I know they'd go after him for negligence. Yeah. That's the greatest form of love. I don't want to give a third party consent to do anything to my child.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because. If it were true, and it's concerns about parental consent, it's both ways. The parent is either consenting in the affirmative or in the negative, withholding consent. It's the same transaction. Mm-hmm. I think they'd want to make that clear in the bill.
Well, that's what we said. Can you make it clear? And the responses that we got, once again, red flag alarm.
Not our business.
Well, they said we've gotten too far. We're not going to change things now. We got to pass it.
What?
Don't pass
bad bills.
We've
done too much work, Kevin. We've put too much into this.
We've gotten too close to the cliff, Gary.
Right.
Even though you tell us that this road leads right over the cliff, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm going too fast. I'm not going to put in my brakes. Let's just hit it.
And yeah. you know what I say to that? Tell that to a vaccine-injured parent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Tell that to them. Because they took one for the team, and now they suffer lifelong.
Mm.
That's not okay.
That is not okay.
Nope.
So for the sake of our audience, what's the bill number?
This is House Bill 2936, and it's scheduled to go on the floor Thursday. Watch it closely.
Which
it could
be the
switch
day
around.
After this
I don't know.
Podcast yeah. goes live.
So does the digital currencies bill that I'm writing about. We'll be going to the House floor mm-hmm. on Thursday. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just crazy. What's this? So the Senate bill, has that passed the floor on the Senate side yet?
I believe that is.
Or it's just past committee.
Gary, I don't know anymore. All these bills.
Give us that number too. What's the Senate bill number?
Senate 2749.
All right. Just want to make sure we get that out there so folks can look that up and take action. What else you got for us, Amy, in our last few moments?
I really want to bring your attention to another issue that was brought by the legislative, and that is the mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. And we don't deny people
which
need help.
Which we're
and
on
all of
fire
that.
To address here because of the Covenant shooting 1 year ago and all that stuff.
Well, you know, going back to the medical associations, the captured agencies, they are pushing for the gun control as a public health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's a public health issue, our question at Reform Pharma is, you are in the position to check the pharmaceuticals that actually have FDA black box warnings that tell you they can increase suicidal
violence
and homicidal mm-hmm. ideation, yep. addiction, and aggression.
Yeah.
That's the exact thing that they're pushing all this money through to help. Nobody is looking at that. Why? Mm. Why are they not getting the numbers?
Ooh, ooh, ooh,
quiz.
Money.
Bingo.
And because that would end,
right,
a lot of the violence that they claim to be worried about, right? And that violence suits their end. Whatever they can do to take away our right to self-defend and have firearms So they want the violence, don't they? They want the destruction. They want people to die not only through toxins, they also want people to die through tragedies and shootings so that they can say, remove the arms from the law-abiding citizens.
It's what gives them what they need to convince us to give up our liberty.
Right.
They need that fear.
And stay in their lane and do their job and find out what information that we need, which is people on these drugs, what's going on with them? We know that it's connected. Figure it out. And, Senator Hensley was on the floor the other day, and he had a great, Senator Crow and Senator Hensley both questioned that. Why are we not looking at this? Why do we not? Why are you skipping over this? And we know why. But it's time for the people to demand. That's the real public crisis that we have.
And I may be wrong on this because I don't work. It's been so long now. But so we just had the 1 year anniversary of the Covenant shooting here in Nashville, and of course that made national news, and the idea that there was a shooter's manifesto that was never released, that made national news. But correct me if I'm wrong, I know it was in the public domain, it was talked about and asked for, but have we ever seen a toxicology report from the shooter?
There was a toxicology report, and I'm not speaking professionally to it, but they did not test for those types of drugs. And if they did, it's hidden, but that was not asked for. It was basically just street drugs.
Yeah, wow. I do remember that. That was the big red flag.
Mm-hmm.
The toxicology report showed only what they had tested for, but they didn't test for these other drugs.
For these, what do they call them, these black box warning types of drugs.
They're psychotropic drugs, and they have psychiatric drugs. Psychotropics is there's a whole group of them that are like that, but they...
So the public still has no knowledge whatsoever as to whether or not this shooter was on these drugs.
They did get file number 46, which is a medical file. They did confiscate that, but nothing has been said about it.
And remember, I just forgot what I was going to say. Oh, you can never find what you're not looking for. Right? And that's what's happening here. They tell us, we've done all this search and we haven't found the drugs that you would expect her to have in her system. Looked for them? No, I haven't looked for those.
There's a good explanation for that too, because the behavioral health industry is now interweaving and setting up shop in the law enforcement offices. Separate pharma and state. It's got to be done.
Didn't we have a bill that was filed this year that I'm going to misstate it, but I think in paraphrasing here, that in the instance of a violent crime or a homicide or something, that whether or not the perpetrator was on one of these psychotropic drugs was required to be reported to the TBI or whatever it was. Like it's required to be part of the process.
So the one that I'm thinking of, again, there's millions of them but psychotropic drugs would have been looked at in that instance. And Senator Crow was running that in the Senate, and
Mary
and Chairman Littleton. And Littleton pulled it when it was called.
Yeah, she pulled it.
She pulled it. And it was on the anniversary of the shooting. And this would have helped. This would have helped information that needs to be public.
Her excuse for pulling it was that she felt like she didn't want to bring up a bill like this on the anniversary of the shooting.
Right.
And so she killed the bill.
She killed her own bill.
Well, I personally think she killed it for other reasons. That's just...
You're saying that was pretext.
That's Gary Humble's opinion, okay?
Do you think the industry maybe lobbied that hard? Or what do you think,
I'm
Gary?
I'm sure... Look, I'm sure that no one went into Mary Littleton's office and talked to her about this bill. I'm sure she heard nothing about it.
Right.
And she just decided, it's just not a good time. I bet that's exactly how it went down.
This is funny because, speaking of that, it reminded me of when the bill... Let's see, which one was it? It's a Kumar bill, actually. The AAP put out that the anti-vax community just got wind of this bill. We must be louder. Mm. It's not about being louder.
Yeah. And again,
it's about doing the right thing.
It's about doing the right thing and taking care of people. And instead, it's just become so political. But yeah, that was great to see. are a force, and it's being recognized. And I think that one of the things at Reform Pharma we try to promote is that speak up, stand firm, and if you did the wrong thing, turn around, pivot, and do the right thing. And that's what's going to motivate people to change. And we are going to have a voice, finally.
So make sure, tell folks how they can find out more about Reform Pharma.
So you can go to our website, reformpharmanow.org, and Children's Health Defense, obviously, is childrenshealthdefense.org. But Reform Pharma is concentrated in Tennessee, so we've put a lot of energy and efforts to get pharma and state separated here.
Yeah, you can. I was taking a look at that website yesterday in preparation for today, and I was impressed at how much Tennessee activity there was right at the forefront of Reform Pharma. So congratulations to you and everyone else who's doing that. It does make a difference, doesn't it?
And I'd like to say one more thing about the pharma side. Pharma side, it seems to have affected everyone, whether it was a family member or personally, and that's death and injury by big pharma corruption. Mm-hmm. And it's time to stop the pharma side, and it's time to speak up.
Amen.
Kevin, I need to hire like a marketing firm or a PR firm because I don't have any like really cool, slick things like pharmacide or the separation
great,
of pharma and state. You know, all I have is, what's the word I say all the time? I can't see. That's how bad it is. I can't even remember
recall
my own thing. Anyway.
There's not just one. You say so many. So which one are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. And the vociferous nature that I have. But if there's a PR firm out there that can help us with that, we'd be appreciative.
Pharmacide. Love it.
Yes. And we have a podcast that we do. We do a monthly CHD TV show, and we're diving in. And this next show that we're going to have on CHD TV, I think it runs April 22nd, is diving into the CDC.
Great. Well, thanks, Amy. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about Tennessee Stands, visit TennesseeStands.org to donate, volunteer, or get more information about what we're doing to preserve liberty for the people of Tennessee. You can also follow along on all social platforms at Tennessee Stands. As Thomas Paine reminded us, those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it.